Joining us now is Shelley Freeman, who is the chief of staff of the YIVO Institute for Jewish Research. And YIVO is an acronym with the word Yiddish in it someplace. And the reason I asked Shelley Freeman on is because the YIVO Institute is known for having this extraordinarily deep and wide historical archive of the Jewish people that came from Eastern Europe. And I happen to be one of them. And many, many millions are more. And so the YIVO Institute is considered to be just an extraordinary resource for people who want to know more about their own history. Shelley Freeman, welcome to the Lisa Wexler Show today. Hello.
Hi, Lisa. Thank you so much. I'm very excited to be on your show.
Am I listening to Australia?
You definitely are. This is not an American or New York accent. This is an Australian accent.
Oh, how fabulous, Shelley. I didn't know you were from Australia. Where are you from in Australia?
I'm from Melbourne, Australia. So I moved to New York in July 2018. And what I don't know if a lot of your listeners know, but Melbourne actually has the largest per capita number of Holocaust survivors outside of Israel. After the war, a lot of Jews from Poland made their way to Melbourne.
I didn't know that.
We have
no
a very rich Jewish history and specifically Eastern European Jewish history in Melbourne.
That's amazing. And are you from that history yourself? Are you an Eastern European
Absolutely,
Jew originally?
Absolutely. So I was born in Melbourne, but both sets of grandparents came from Poland. And most of my friends' grandparents came from Poland. And it was very interesting for me when I moved to America to meet other Jewish people whose grandparents were born in America, who had come out earlier. A lot of the Jewish population in Melbourne, they came out just after the war or just before the war. So most of my friends growing up, their grandparents were all immigrants, mostly in Melbourne from Poland. In Sydney, a lot of Jews from Hungary came, but from Melbourne, it was a lot of Polish Jews. And as I said, it wasn't until I started coming to America and meeting people who could say my grandparents were American. And also we had a big influx of South African Jews come to Melbourne in the 80s and 90s. And again, they weren't, that population wasn't sort of, thank God, escaped the war because they came to South Africa earlier.
So this is what I wanted to ask you. So is the Melbourne population a pre-war Polish population or a post-war Polish population?
Predominantly post-war. So basically there are Jews that came out with the time of the convicts, would you believe? So the oldest synagogue in Australia is in a state called Tasmania, which was a penal colony.
Wow.
And it was built by a couple of Jewish convicts who, once they finished being convicts, they became successful business people, and they built the first synagogue in Australia.
So <they're>, hilarious,
you've
really.
Got to, it is hilarious, and it's a place called Tasmania. So there are Jews that came out at the time, as I said, at the time of the convicts, and Jews that were in Australia much earlier on. But a mass wave of immigration happened just before the war, just a little bit before, and a huge amount after the war. There was a time in which our immigration policy enabled that. Because if you recall, even after the war and the world knew about the horrors of what happened to the Jewish people, it was still hard for Jewish people to go to certain countries.
Oh, I know.
So as a result, there's a lot of, as I said, the Jews from Poland tended to come to Melbourne, and the Jews from Hungary tended to come to Sydney.
That's really
And then
something.
Later on, in the 80s and 90s, we had a lot of people from South Africa come, a lot of people from Russia come, and Israel. But Melbourne is a very Eastern European, Polish, Jewish community.
We're chatting with Shelley Freeman, who's the chief of staff of the YIVO Institute for Jewish Research, which is based here in New York. One more follow-up question about Poland, because I have very close family friends in Israel whose parents were Polish and they were survivors of the Holocaust. Obviously, that's who they were. But they made their way to Israel, and now they have Polish passports thanks to the Polish government, that basically it's sort of a way of reparations. They want to allow people who were deprived of everything, allow their descendants to be able to come back to Poland if they want to. Did they do that for the Australian Polish community too?
I know that that's, I actually know a friend of mine in Australia, someone I know actually has set up a business around helping people get their Polish passport. So it's a very common thing that's done and that's available. And I think it's also, not only does it give them a Polish passport, but ultimately it gives them an EU passport.
Exactly. That's their
and
entry
there's a lot
to
of,
the EU.
And that's really, yeah. I think, why a lot of people do it, because they see it as a passport to the European Union, which has a lot of benefits.
Yes. So, wow, that is really fascinating. So, Shelley, with this robust life in Melbourne, and I visited Melbourne. I went there for a day. I was doing a cruise throughout Australia and New Zealand. And
yes.
It's a beautiful town. I loved it. We spent the whole day. I loved it. Why did you move here? What brought you to New York?
Sure. That's a really good question, Lisa. Well, I have to say, you know, I think everyone, maybe I'm a little bit of a spiritual person. I think everyone has in their soul, you know, a pull to something, or have their own bucket list or something that they know in their soul they need to do. And from a very young age, I always had this big desire to live and work overseas. My aunt was a real career woman, and I would watch her work in various countries around the world. Like when I was 10, we visited her in Singapore and then Amsterdam. And I think somewhere in there, me, I had that vision that one day I would also live and work in another country outside of Melbourne. And I don't know, New York sort of resonated with me. And I have to, and I wanted to do that from like the early 2000s. It was a dream for a very long time. And I remember on my walls in my apartment in Melbourne, I would collect these New Yorker magazines, and I would frame them, and I would have them across my wall. And yeah, so it's something I just wanted to do, but it's not as easy to achieve because you need a visa in order to stay here for a long period of time. So it really meant, unless I found someone to marry, that I needed to get a job and have someone sponsor me. So for a long time, I tried this way, that way, and nothing really happened. And by just as way of background, my background, I was a lawyer for many years in Australia, and then I worked politically. I worked in politics in Australia, which is nothing compared to the politics here, just by the by. And then I had my own business. And when I had my own business, I had various clients, and through one of my clients, I ended up meeting the vice chairperson of the YIVO board. Her name is Irene Pletka. She lives in New York, but she grew up in Melbourne, so she would visit Melbourne every year, and I got to meet her during one of her visits in 2015, and I thought, she's the right person. I said to her, you know, Irene, I really want to live in New York. Where can you help me? And she connected me in 2015 to the CEO of YIVO. And we had a couple of phone calls, a couple of, you know, video calls, emails exchanged, and really nothing happened. Nothing came of it. But in 2017, I needed to go to New York twice for various clients. And I ended up meeting in person the CEO of YIVO, Jonathan Brent. And later I met the chairman of the board, Ruth Levine, on my second trip. And it all sort of came from there. And what it showed me is there's one thing to have phone calls, emails, but nothing is as powerful as meeting in person.
Oh, that's so true. I mean, there's, yes, 100%.
And from 100%. There, there was just kind of a chemistry. It felt very, what's the word? I, as a young, you know, as at school, one of my favorite subjects was Jewish history. I just ate it up. I loved it. I went to an Orthodox, would you believe, an Orthodox Lubavitch girls' school for most
really?
Of my schooling.
Really?
Yeah. My parents weren't, there's a very strong Lubavitch movement in Melbourne as well, very strong. My parents weren't Lubavitch or Orthodox, but they kind of just wanted me to have a strong Jewish education. So that's why they sent me there. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we had a lot of Jewish education. We had a lot of Jewish history. And I don't know, I just loved it. And I particularly loved Eastern European Jewish history. So there just felt something so right about coming to work at YIVO.
And so we're chatting with Shelley Freeman, who's the chief of staff there. I probably should have started out by asking you, but I got so interested in your accent and your life. What is the mission of YIVO? What is YIVO?
Sure. So YIVO started in 1925 in Vilna, Poland, which is now Vilnius, Lithuania.
Hold on, that's my Grandma Helen's town.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
In Vilnius? Okay, well, I was
tiny. So my grandma, who was a very extraordinary person, she was born in 1899 and lived to 2006.
Okay. Wow.
Actually, that's incredible. 2005 and a half. She was 106 and a half when she passed. She passed April 1st, 2005. So she lived in three centuries, which is amazing.
Wow.
And she emigrated to this country in 1912 on the George Washington ship. I have all of her information.
Wow.
And she's in Ellis Island and all of that. And she grew up on a farm in Connecticut after that. But she never had more than an eighth grade real education. But she was born in a shtetl called Ligum, which was a tiny little village outside Vilnius. That's where she
was. Okay, well, Lisa, I guarantee you, if you came and did a little bit of research in our archives, you would find a whole lot of information about your grandmother's shtetl.
Really?
And all sorts of things. Yeah, definitely. That's the whole purpose of the show. And I think I was so impressed with your introduction because I think you really nailed it. It's about providing an opportunity to connect the Jewish people with their history and their culture of Eastern Europe. So it was started by a group of academic scholars, intellectuals back in 1925 in Vilna at the time, who wanted to preserve, document, study Jewish life in all its forms. Part of that, part of what they did also was set up a Zalma movement. And Zalma is a Yiddish word for collectors. How do you understand the everydayness of Jewish life? You collect the everydayness of Jewish life. So they would collect the everyday material culture of Jewish life. You know, we have things like letters, newspaper clippings, posters, all that kind of stuff, which showed what it was like to live at the time. But we also have the most incredible things like the handwritten diary of Theodor Herzl, 10 years before the Dreyfus Affairs, the original manuscripts of Sholem Aleichem and Anski, who is the one that wrote the Dibbuk. We have the largest collection of Holocaust material in the world outside of Yad Vashem. Oh. We also have, because we had a pre-war archive, YIVO is one of the only cultural organizations to have survived the war. And it then came to New York, and we continue collecting. So we have this huge Yiddish theater collection. We have the highest collection. We have collections of not just life in Eastern Europe, but the life that Eastern European Jews created all around the world. So, for example, when I first started, and I had many tours of the archives, I was shown a poster from 1939 in Melbourne, where I come from, of a Yiddish theater performance in 1939. So someone, one of these collectors, has sent a poster from Melbourne to YIVO, either in YIVO in Vilna. You know what I mean? As part of the collection. So it really blows your mind. So now we have an archive, and I should just add, there's a recent excellent piece on YIVO on 60 Minutes, which, you know, it aired early November, and I was very lucky that I got to travel with the 60 Minutes team to Vilnius, and that was my first time going to Vilnius earlier this year. And as you know, Vilna was the Jerusalem of the North. It was the place of scholarship.
Wait a minute. Hold on, Shelley. Hold on.
Yeah.
I think I have a friend of mine who went with you.
Okay. Who's your friend?
Wait. Did you go with Schwarzenegger on that trip?
As in Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Yeah, yeah.
No, because, he wasn't on that trip.
Okay, let me explain.
We went in March, yeah.
Oh, okay, because in November, mm-hmm. Arnold Schwarzenegger with 60 Minutes, this is weird, okay, they went to Auschwitz because Arnold Schwarzenegger is Austrian, he's not Jewish, but he wanted to confront, I guess, the Holocaust as an Austrian-American.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a friend Suzanne Miller, whose parents were Holocaust survivors who came to this country, who were originally from Vilnius. And that trip, so the 60 Minutes crew went to Auschwitz. And then afterwards, some of the people, and I didn't know if it was 60 Minutes who continued to go, but Suzanne went in November. From Auschwitz to Vilnius. In other words, she and some other people went there. So I was just wondering if maybe, I know you said it aired in November, but it aired
in November this year. And Lisa, what I'll do separately is I'll send you the link so you can watch it. So we went in March this year to do the filming. And, you know, and I don't know if you know, but the Vilna Gaon, he was the famous, you know, one of the, he came obviously from Vilna. But YIVO had an incredible history, a miraculous history during the war. YIVO was looted during the war by the Nazis, who not only wanted to destroy the Jews, but wanted to destroy their material culture. And they also wanted to take some of the things that YIVO had back to Frankfurt, because they thought they were going to wipe out the entire Jews. That was their Jewish race. That was their intention. So they wanted to create an institute on the Jewish question in Frankfurt, almost like a museum on an extinct race.
Oh, my
God.
Shelley, stay right there. Hold on. We're going to come right back. Shelley Freeman, Chief of Staff of the YIVO Institute for Jewish Research. We'll be right back. We are talking with Shelley Freeman, Chief of Staff of the YIVO Institute for Jewish Research. 203-333-9422 is our number. If you'd like to call and ask a question of Shelley or give a comment, 203-333-9422. So, Shelley, I was interrupting you, and you were talking about the fact that the Germans were so certain that they were going to exterminate the Jewish race that they were already building a museum to the extinct one. Is that right?
Yeah, a museum on the Jewish question. So that was what it was called. It was being built in Frankfurt. And they why I'm telling this, because I'm just trying to explain a little bit YIVO's miraculous history. So basically the Germans come and they want to loot YIVO because they had obviously heard of YIVO and they wanted to destroy the Jewish material culture as well as just the Jews, but they also wanted to take some of the materials from YIVO for this institute that they were creating on the Jewish question. It was called the Institute on the Jewish Question, back to Frankfurt. So they sent a special unit, a special Nazi unit, to go through the materials in the YIVO archive. And when they get there, they realize that they can't make heads or tails of it. So they put together like a slave labor group from the Vilna Ghetto, made up of intellectuals and scholars, many of whom had been either worked for, associated with YIVO, to grow through the materials for them. And about a group of them, about three dozen of them, couldn't bear to give the materials over to the Nazis or to have them destroyed. And they became known as the Paper Brigade. So what they would do, they would hide the materials on their body at the risk of their lives and then take it back to the ghetto at the end of the day and hide it underground. Can you imagine? If they were caught, it probably meant instant death. And a lot of people in the ghetto would tease them and say, you know, we understand risking your life for food. We need food. But why for these documents? Why are you saving these documents? And there's been a book written about them by David Fishman. And one of the women who was part of the Paper Brigade was interviewed and was asked, why did you do this? And she said, look, I thought I was going to be killed anyway. At least I thought I could save something for the future, you know, for the future of the Jewish people to understand their history. Anyway, Lisa, long story short, what ended up happening is the stuff that was sent to Frankfurt that the Germans, the Nazis were going to use for this institute, at the end of the war, there was a unit put together called the Monument Men from the U.S. Army.
They made a movie about them.
They made a movie with George Clooney. Yeah. That unit was sent to find the stolen art. But when this unit, the stolen art that the Nazis had taken, but this unit uncovered this YIVO material in Frankfurt. Mm-hmm. And by this time, YIVO had relocated to New York. So they sent the material back to YIVO in New York. Can you imagine? And when I started working there, my boss showed me this material. And you see all this Jewish material with this big Nazi stamp on it, this big eagle stamp, because the Nazis had processed it. And remember so that was a part of the pre-war archive sent to Frankfurt, but recovered by the Monument Men who sent it back to New York. Then there was a whole lot of material in the pre-war archive that was destroyed. But I told you about these paper brigades, the people that from the Vilna Ghetto that saved it and hid it underground. After the war, the ones that survived came back to Vilna and unearthed it, uncovered it, and they wanted to create a museum there with this material. But then the Russians took over, and the Russians wanted to destroy this material as well. They didn't want any Jewish cultural material existing. And the Jews that were there had to flee, but this material was again saved from the pulping mills by this Lithuanian librarian. He wasn't Jewish. His name was Altanas Ulpis. He probably didn't fully understand what the material was, but he understood it was precious. Wow. And to make a long story short, he hid it in a church in Lithuania.
Unbelievable.
And there it stood until the fall of communism.
Unbelievable.
And then it was unearthed. I mean, I just always feel that this material had a will of its own to survive. It survived the Nazis, and then it survived the Russians. And then basically we had half of YIVO's pre-war archive in New York and half of it in Vilna. And when this stuff was uncovered after the war, the Lithuanian government didn't want to give it back. They said it was created here. Mm-hmm. We weren't the ones that stole it, and
it's
here
true.
It should stay.
I understand.
Anyway,
right. Yeah.
Anyway,
yep.
There was a long legal issues and all of that. Anyway, my current boss, his name is Jonathan Brent, he had a solution. He said, let the material in Vilnius stay there. Let the material in New York stay here. Let's mm-hmm. not fight about ownership. But in the meantime, and having now been exposed and working in an archive, you see this material, a couple of hundred years old, it needs to be preserved.
Sure.
But let's just raise the money to preserve it in each country and to digitally reunite it. That was a seven-year project. It just finished at the beginning of this year. We call it the Edward Blank Online Vilna Collection Project, which basically seven years, $7 million to digitize the whole pre-war archive and reunite it online. And that's
unbelievable.
Very,
that's incredible. All I have to do now, Shelley Freeman, is to understand Yiddish because I don't. I can't read and write it. So
yeah, that's okay.
Yes.
We also have Yiddish classes as well.
Yes.
But I will just go back to your question. What's its mission? Is to make this material available, you know, available, accessible, make it available online, digitize it, preserve it. You know, it's fulfilling an age-old mission that the four founders had in 1925, but in the most contemporary way. You know, they couldn't have envisaged modern technology of digitization, computers. The fact that this material can now be available to people in Melbourne or all around the world.
So, Shelley, we're chatting with Shelley Freeman, who is the Chief of Staff of YIVO Institute for Jewish Research. Is the material translated already? Is it
yes.
being in the
yes.
process
in
of
some...
being translated?
So what we've done, and that's a really good question, Lisa, and I have to say that the material always isn't just in Yiddish. It's in many languages, you know, Polish, German, all sorts of languages. So we do stuff where we just digitize and just put it online for access. And we've also decided, exactly going to your point, we've decided to create, again, something that Jonathan, it was his idea and brainchild to create an online museum where the material is translated and also put in a historical context. So we've just done our first exhibition, which is about, we have the autobiography of a little girl written in pre-war Vilna of an 11-year-old girl. And it traces her life from before the war, during the war, and after the war. She ended up surviving and ending up in America. But we use that as a thread to then access many other artifacts where we translate and we put them in a historical context.
Wow. Fantastic. So if I wanted to, just as an American person, research my own roots, which I know have some vague European, maybe I don't know that my grandmother was from Vilna, but I know that somehow there's some Eastern European roots that I want to find out more about. Do I go to the YIVO Institute and show up and knock on your door? Do I need an appointment? Is it a generalized library that anybody can look in?
It is. We have a reading room that you make an appointment and you can see certain material. You can, you know, you can ask to see it. But even more, Lisa, in this day and age, you can do a lot of it online.
Wow. It's fantastic. Shelley Freeman, thank you so much for visiting with us this last half hour. I've learned so much. It's been a fascinating story. I'm going to have to meet you in person.
I would love that. It's been just beautiful. Even though I've never met you, I feel like I know you.
Shelley Freeman on the Lisa Wexler Show. Thank you so much. Joining us right now is Jim Luongo, the director of the Laramie Project, and Arnella Tenmeer, a gay member of the cast. And that's important to state because this play is all about recognition and respect for gay members of our community. Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Arnella, to the Lisa Wexler Show today. Hello.
Good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning. So, Jim Luongo, let me begin with you. Can you give us the specs of where and when and how people can see the Laramie Project?
Yes. The Laramie Project, we will perform on December 10th at 7 p.m. at the Unitarian Church on 10 Lions Plain Road, Westport. And we're suggesting $20 donations, but or pay whatever you can. Now, all proceeds will go to the Triangle Community Center, and we hope to have a talk back with the with me and the cast immediately following the show. Those are the basics, Lisa.
Okay, so, and Jim, what is the Laramie Project, and why one night only? What kind of a theater presentation is this?
Well, that's a good question. The UU Westport Players performed the Laramie Project November 18, 19, and 20. We were so successful that our audiences pressed us to do an encore performance, and we contacted the TCC, the Triangle Community Center in Norwalk, which is a local LGBTQ community, and asked them if they would like us to give the proceeds to them as a benefit. Mm-hmm. So this one off time on Saturday is a encore benefit performance for TCC in Norwalk.
Well, it's a pretty big day for the LGBTQ community, given the headline of the day is really extraordinary that in a bipartisan effort, Congress has decided to create a statute that they expect will be signed soon by Joe Biden, President Biden, that will, you know, federally legislate once and for all the right of people to marry each other despite their gender or regardless of their gender. And so Arnella Tenmeer, you are a member of the cast. You're joining us today.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about what this play is, why it's such an unusual kind of a play?
Well, the unusuality, if I could say that, is it's not your traditional play. It's not like everybody in the cast has one character that they play. And you go on stage and you play your character and and that's it. In this case, you have every actor on stage has multiple characters. And the way that we're set up is that actually the audience can see us morph basically into the different characters that we play. And we go from one person to another person. So that's one of the unusual things about it. And the other thing that for us was a very humbling experience was the fact that these are based on real people. This is not it's not a fictional story. These are based on interviews that were done by the Tectonic Project theater group in 1998 when this whole thing happened in Laramie, Wyoming. And they've made from the interviews and from journals and things that they found through the media, they've made a play out of it. And that's what makes it so unusual.
So thank you. So Jim Luongo, what signature event happened in Larry, Wyoming? What are we talking about here?
Well, the the signature event, as you call it, is the murder of a young gay man, Matthew Shepard. And it became, it sort of lit a fuse to the issue of violence against gay people. And of course, it caused great social unrest across the United States in various cities. You may recall from your history that it went right around the world. This place sort of had a reverberation right around the world, where people became more aware of the need to resist violence, of homophobia. So it's had a very big impact on legislation too. As you referred to earlier, you said the Biden's going to sign a bill that will make marriage between same-sex partners legal across the country.
Yeah.
I think this is all, it's got that kind of an impact across the country and across the world.
Yeah, it's really a sea change from the, at least politically, an enormous sea change from where this country was back when Matthew Shepard was killed. That's for sure. It's extraordinarily different world. Yeah. Yeah. And yet there are places and pockets where there's still a lot of hatred, a lot of fear, a lot of prejudice, a lot of bigotry. There's still a lot of that too.
Well, that's the thing I would like to say, that people who watch the Laramie Project on stage are not just looking at people from Laramie. The Laramie Project is really, let me put it this way, Laramie in the play is a kind of every town. The play holds a mirror up to us, and we see ourselves in the characters of the town of Laramie, with all of their political and religious and social leanings, good and bad. And I think that's the thing I was really impressed with after staying with this project for so long, that it dawned on me that this is not about Laramie exactly. I mean, or I should say only. It's really about every town and the pockets of resistance to accepting people for who they are. It's really got quite a kind of impact on me artistically to see how well made this play is, that it could be extended to audiences' personal lives.
Yeah. And Arnella Tenmeyer. Arnella, where do you live? Do you live locally in our listening WICC community? Where are you from?
Yes, I live in Bridgeport, Connecticut. And I've been in this country for over 30 years. And I've been at the UU church for the past, 12, 13 years. And part of Jim's UU Westwood Fairs for the past 5-6 years, I believe. Jim, do I have that right?
That's right.
This has been, this is really an awesome and play to be part of. It's just one of those plays that it comes, for me anyway, it's a once in a lifetime honor to be able to play. And it's kind of funny because there's some of my characters, I play characters that are completely against what I believe. And on top of that, the coincidence of the fact that it happened, our last performance was the Sunday of the Club Q shooting. That was for us also kind of like, wow, this is still happening. This is still relevant.
Sure. Sure.
And
by the way, that's a very weird, and that's such a very weird shooting, because the person who is accused of the shooting is somebody who has identified as non-binary for a long time, which would put that person in the umbrella of the LGBTQ community that presumably, you know, that venue was designed to be accepting and tolerant and allow people to enjoy themselves. It's a very strange, no one's really gotten to the bottom yet of what that was about, you know. It's very weird, very strange circumstance.
Very weird.
But Arnella, yes, go ahead, please, yes.
Oh, yeah, no, I was just going to say yes. I became aware of that little detail also. And what I've read is that he's, you know, it seems like his again, you find, you know, the generational thing, he might have not been very accepting of himself due to the fact that his parents, especially his father, was very anti-gay, and you know, that could have had an effect on how he presented and how he dealt with whatever was inside of him, you know. So
we're chatting with Jim Longo and Arnella Tenmeer, and there will be a one-time repeat by demand performance, encore performance at the Unitarian Church in Westport tomorrow of the Laramie Project to benefit the Triangle Community Center. I'm going to gather that to some degree, to some great degree, it'll probably feel very celebratory in terms of the people there who are going to be celebrating very hard-fought, won struggles for acceptance politically and socially within the United States of America. It's really, when you think about it, it's just an extraordinarily huge leap from where politicians were not too long ago. So I want to thank you both for coming on the show. Congratulations for your own participation and performance. I'm sure it'll be a packed house. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
A pleasure.